It's hour one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. This is Future.
Hi, honey.
Welcome. Another week of looking at the future over the next 2 hours.
With rose-colored glasses on. At least I will.
Yeah. And a real report. As many of you know, our home station here, KSCO Radio, is on the Cochrane Lagoon in Santa Cruz.
I bet you didn't know that.
The Cochrane Lagoon, C-O-R-C-O-R-A-N. I kind of did, but I didn't really know the details of it.
Yes. Well, you are such a nature lover, and it is so beautiful out there right now.
So that's what I'm looking at. We had a big meeting at KSCO yesterday, as a matter of fact. We were looking at the future of ourselves in the role of media. And where is it going? And it looks like we're on a collision course with the internet. And what happens when classic radio has a collision course with the internet? What happens at that point? Do we just go away? Or do we become a meme floating in a sea of millions of memes? What happens to our shows?
Well, songs did not go away when the printing press came around. I think that the more tools we have for remembering and communicating, the more tools we will use, and the more diverse will be the memories and the conversations.
Yeah. And part of the future looks like, at least for the likes of us, is to play with Facebook Live. Looks like that's one of the frontiers. Something we've been looking at ourselves, in that it creates an instant access to like 500 million people at any one time. It's like from an individual's point of view to get a message out, that's a big deal. I used to require Fox News or something, or NBC, CNN, something on a national, if not an international level. So,
well, there may be that many Facebook users, but they're certainly not all paying attention to the same thing.
No, they're not. It's all about how people find you. What do they search for?
No, people aren't searching on Facebook either. It's being fed to them. What's coming up on an individual feed is Facebook deciding whose information to share with you based on who your friends are, what they're sharing, what your profile says about you, what your likes and shares say about you.
Yeah, good point, Mrs. V. What do you think there's a name for that algorithm?
Facebook.
What does human want?
The Zuckerberg monster is out there trying to help.
So, okay, what do we want Zuckerberg to give us? I guess would be the question. What's possible? So I'm thinking, we're at KSCO on Cochrane Lagoon. You look at the place, and it's like a little mini ecosystem of itself. It's got some really special birds. I've seen like egrets, for example, here. Little areas where fish like to swim, natural beaches. There's a very pristine marshland. Now, if we were able to use media to its full extent, what I'd like to see is all these little ecosystems. I'd like to be able to plug in to watch the sunset over the Pacific. I'd love to see the sunrise over the mountains here, Mount Madonna.
Okay, so like when that. The internet swallows the radio station, you're hoping that there'll be some Facebook streams of the lagoon.
Yeah, that's one of the strong assets of KSCO here. And Santa Cruz, I mean, all of us are living in paradise, so our personal streams on Facebook and other sources is already an amazing place. We already have a head start in environment, for creating stories and sharing our adventures.
Okay, so I take it you're looking forward to some big shift in the future, Dr. Future?
Well, it's happening now. I mean, people are getting into Facebook Live more and more. Shannon Leonard, or Brad Leonard of the Lawnmower Man, his son has been very involved with Periscope, and that's a live stream from each individual person as well. So I think one of the next things is how does those live individuated streams interact with community radio stations like KSCO? What's the connection there?
And that's what the meeting was all about yesterday.
Well, it's one of the things we're talking about as a community station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess we can get the audience to chime in if you have any
insights.
Yeah, what would
you like to see, Facebook KCO, Live? Okay. On Facebook
KCO,
Live.
Yeah. What kind of happy marriage can be made there?
Yeah, what is this internet connection thing here?
And of course, we all know that Flight 1080 has been doing Facebook Live the last couple of weeks. Doc Wallach's show has been doing it for, I guess, a few months. 2016 was a very big year for the internet going live with interactive streaming. Instead of just being able to send text messages to people, you can send full-on videos and you can answer questions in chat.
You could show Ben Fuchs a part of your anatomy that needs attention and see what he says.
I haven't heard of any of that going on, but I see you're giving people ideas.
Well, it gets more personal, right? The thing is that the intelligences that we have at our fingertips become more available to us. That's what their search engines make. They give us access to knowledge, wisdom, information now. And going live brings in the live human awareness of people's actual intelligence. Yeah, it's exciting time. This is like a serious mind fire here, folks.
I just love the way that for you, there's just this perfect continuum between the life in nature that is just bursting forth in the lagoon, in the ocean, in the sky, and that just follows step by step right into the technology of the radio station and the internet and the messaging.
Well, they're all sitting right
Facebook
here
Live.
In the lagoon. Yes, it's all
one big happy ecosystem.
It's all connected.
All right, folks, time for our first break. Dr. Future will be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. The story today on how Tesla gains happened as Elon Musk visited the White House caught my attention.
Oh, okay. So Tesla stories, and Elon was at the White House on Monday morning.
Yahoo Finance reported that Tesla is now up 1.48% mm-hmm. at $248.34 a share.
Mm-hmm. Just since yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What did they talk about at this meeting? Well, first of all, it seemed to have to do with the future of manufacturing.
The future of manufacturing in America. I'd say Elon Musk is an expert on that.
Right. And definitely if I was in Trump's position, definitely would consider him one of the visionaries of manufacturing. The Tesla factory here in the East Bay, the Gigafactory.
The Gigafactory in Reno.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, making the batteries for all our Tesla machines.
Right. He definitely thinks like a planetary robot. You know? He's definitely looking for places to put power cells and call upon renewable sources of energy like our local star.
What do you think creates robots, sweetheart?
Well, he puts robots to good use. I mean,
yeah.
I am still just in awe of the tour that we took of the Fremont Tesla factory.
It's amazing. It really
is. It's really amazing.
Henry Ford would be proud to see something like 100 years later.
That's right. Putting big, giant robot arms on the assembly line.
Moving metal.
Right. Running. Pick up cars and spin them around and lift them from the first floor to the second floor so they can go to that conveyor belt. And boy, it's just amazing.
So the future of manufacturing and, of course, cutting regulations.
Wait.
Those are the big issues.
Connectivity there? Oh, Elon?
I brought back to the
there
the
we were.
The
Elon was
yesterday.
At the meeting. Okay. I'm there now.
Okay. Yahoo Finance. Naturally, the finance would just cut that. They would talk about the cutting the regulations part of the conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
75%, I think, is the number they're bandying about.
Well, as somebody who has way too many things to do on my to-do list, I applaud the idea of getting rid of extra things on the to-do list, like filling out pieces of paper to say that you filled out pieces of paper. I mean, stuff like that just drives me crazy.
Mm, and there's a lot of that in government.
There is. There's a lot of jobs that are just checklist jobs.
You thought it was bad with triplicates and stuff. Wait, when they invented digital.
Right.
You need at least 16 copies of things sometimes.
Well, we're living in a different era now. We should have a lot more automation. They should be able to avoid a lot of paperwork just by having more sensible systems. I mean, yeah. We should be able to have better results, and it shouldn't take as much time from people, and it shouldn't cost as much.
Exactly. And you should be able to do it locally. Hence, buying American means the factories come home to roost.
Mm-hmm.
Only new versions of them. The Chinese keep the old ones. The new nano fabricators, they come here. The future of the nanotech design.
I see you're writing a proposal for our new president.
I would say so, yeah. I think that's the natural direction, and Elon has definitely got a handle on that.
Okay. So tell me more about the meeting of Elon and the president. Who else was there?
My speculation.
What was the goal of the meeting? What are they figuring out?
Well, the future of manufacturing would certainly be on their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that really looks at the whole idea of what the next generation factory looks like.
Well, I think everybody would agree the next generation factory is going to have a lot fewer people in it. So what are we going to do about that?
Well, it moves the idea to a conversation about jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the future of jobs.
Yes, let's call them livelihoods. You know, jobs just sound so much like it's a cog in a wheel. I think if you start thinking about livelihoods, you start thinking about human beings living fulfilled lives and doing it in communities where they're creating wonderful things and working together to make amazing things for their community.
In an ideal situation, you'd want to be able to identify what your skill sets are and apply them as you want to create wealth for yourself, right? So it's a natural feedback loop, and most of nature works that way,
mm-hmm.
including us.
Mm-hmm.
So as such, that would be a priority.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're just a little bit in the airy-fairy zone here in terms of what is desirable and what's possible.
Well, look, the ultimate manufacturing leads to the idea of thinking you want something like a cup, something as simple as a certain kind of coffee cup, and then thinking of it for it, and then the manufacturing processes make it materialize in front of you.
You know,
that's the ultimate
supply and demand.
Right now, Amazon's going, I think, all the way down to 1 hour delivery. Okay, it has to go to the point where it's instantaneous. That's the direction, or it could be like Occam's razor, where you're always approaching instantaneous but never get there.
Hmm.
But I do think that there's a point where your thoughts become something physical.
Hmm.
The 3D printers are a externalization of that kind of thinking in the Western mind. In the Eastern mind, it's just the opposite, but the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
Instant manifestation of creation and reality with your thoughts and awareness of that process.
So are you saying that Elon Musk was meeting with Donald Trump to discuss instant manifestation of your thoughts?
No, that's Dr. Future. Of course, you have to get into the, but they are a faster, more efficient product. I mean, where does it go? Look at, you know, we already, Amazon is down to an hour. It goes to instantaneity.
And whose thoughts are we going to instantly manifest? I bet they're more interested in that question.
Well, who's your client? Who are you servicing, right? And that means us. We're the ones that supposedly in charge here, the people. So what do you want? I'm all for good visions that we put out that can be created at this point, because it's reaching a magical time in history where we can make things real really fast and from an individual level.
Sure. As long as we have individuals putting their energies together and pulling in the same direction.
Well,
everybody's pulling in their own direction and going away from each other, nothing happens, because there's no...
Chaos ensues.
Well,
order dissolves.
Well,
look, my PC just ran into a problem and needs to restart. Can you believe it?
Thank you. Well, what I'm trying to say is that efforts need to be aligned. Individuals can accomplish a lot as individuals, but groups accomplish much more as groups.
Yeah, yeah. Well, our species works that way.
Yeah. Let's say hello to Sean in Live Oak. He would like to contribute something to the show. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Hey there. Well, I know this probably spoke to you late about this last year, but we were talking about hydrogen cars, and I sent you a link about...
Yes, we saw that.
And you also said that you thought you had that link of where Jack Nicholson was trying to start up a hydrogen car company. Did you see that?
I saw that. That was a cute little clip, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed that. That's from the 70s.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not against electric cars. I'm very enthusiastic that Tesla's doing as well.
Yes.
But reason I bring up hydrogen cars is that it can be used to, you know, an internal combustion engine burning hydrogen is clean.
Mm-hmm.
And that solves lots of the problems with the internal combustion
engine. That's when you just burn it, you create water, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so burning it creates liquid. That's, you know, it's reasonable. The only consideration there would be the slipperiness of the road, it seems to me.
Yeah. The other thing that, because the hydrogen car was mostly stifled, and I'm not blaming capitalism, I'm blaming crony capitalism for that.
Yeah.
This impacts other things, like we could be fueling our aircraft with hydrogen. Now, I still remember hearing about a crash where the crash wasn't that bad, but 600 people were killed by the after the fire aftermath.
Oh, the big Zeppelin, the hydrogen.
No, no, no.
What are you talking about?
You mean an aircraft?
Yeah, aircraft. I mean, within the last year or so, an airliner crashed, and it wasn't a very bad crash, but there was a fire afterwards, and 600 people were killed by that fire.
From jet fuel burning?
Yeah. And the thing is the big trick with hydrogen is how do you store it? And there's one technique. Well, there's two techniques. One you saw on that who killed the hydrogen car.
The hydrogen car, right.
And you're storing the hydrides. Those would be fairly safe in a crash because they wouldn't explode or burn. They're just
That's like a powdered form, right? You serve the energy as like a powder.
You know, but the other way of storing it is aluminum gallium pellets. And you just pour water on them in a reaction chamber, and that creates hydrogen.
For some reason, that makes me think of, like, the Wicked Witch of the West melting when she gets, you know, some water tossed on her.
Yeah, in a gas chamber.
I'm just bringing this up for the, you know, for this aircraft thing, is if you had something like that on the tanks in the wings, rather than having jet fuel, had water.
Yeah.
That means that crash would have been a minor occurrence. And the people might have gotten wet, but they wouldn't have burned to death.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hydrogen gets a bad rap, for sure. Yeah. It's the most abundant universal element there is, right? I mean, there's an abundance. This is our true heritage, our true wealth. Why aren't we using it more? Yeah, maybe we need to be more conscious of how it works. Maybe it's something all of us could contribute to if we really got this.
The other thing is, since you're talking about Elon Musk, what he was brought up is that he was thinking of making a breakthrough with the electric aircraft.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go to a break.
Do you want to finish that thought after the break?
Sure.
Okay. All right, great.
Thanks.
We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We have a caller who is just extolling some of the virtues of hydrogen and power.
Yes. Hi, Sean. Welcome back to the show. You were about to say something about hydrogen.
Yeah.
And Elon Musk.
Yeah, Elon Musk didn't go into creating the aircraft, but he did point out that, you know, if you take a regular propeller-driven aircraft and put it up to 50,000 feet with electric motors, electric motors don't care about the altitude, and you get a lot less drag. So you can have a propeller-driven aircraft that's supersonic at 50,000 feet, but I guess the reason he didn't do it is because the limitations of battery technology, you know, range limitations when the
operating ceiling keeps getting better all the time, though.
Yeah.
Really quite remarkable. And what's wonderful about electricity is it's so exquisite control. You can really adapt to the slightest changes in breeze in the atmosphere and keep the craft steady. You know, it's amazing.
But the other thing I'm getting back to is, you know, that if we have more efficient ways of storing hydrogen, either as water that you convert with these aluminum gallium pellets or in that hydride, is that now you have something that can replace batteries with a lot more range. So, you know, having electric aircraft becomes more feasible. And also the other thing I'd like to point out on hydrogen storage is they already have hydrogen fuel cell locomotives that they have a few prototypes of. So you have a completely clean way of having a train. And the other thing that I see also on this is ships at sea.
They could just run on seawater. That would be their source of fuel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's all very clean. That's one of the, in any harbor or anything else where you have lots of ships at, you can see all the contamination that you get for the fuel that the ships have to burn.
Yes, I can see it now. The fleets of autonomous ships all cleanly burning their way, following their routes around the planet, just following their schedule, doing what they do, and delivering us all the goods that we need.
Yeah, so this is the other thing, the reason I'm enthusiastic about electric power, but
yes.
I just think that people are, you know, we're missing something not having this technology developed. And it's not so, like, again, it's probably something that I got in some disagreements with Charles Friedman on, but it's, I'm not blaming capitalism. What I'm blaming is crony capitalism. I'm blaming fossil fuel industry trying to keep themselves as the only providers of fuel. And they're not doing this by competing others in the market.
Sure, it really is important to bring in all these alternatives to playing field. And now the industries, the solar industries, the wind, have matured enough to be able to play at the big boys' tables.
Yeah.
So we're going to see some really big relationships with alternatives now because the technology has gotten so good and so cheap. Solar panels are amazingly cheap now. And it's free energy, relatively speaking. Right? $200, you have 200 watts for 20 years.
Yeah.
20 years, you know, and for $200. And that is normal, right? So it's exciting times. It's really... You being able to work with solar is just the beginning. Now, you're talking about straight burning of hydrogen, using it as a fuel like we're used to with internal combustion engines, right?
That's hydrogen you can use both ways. You can either use it as a straight fuel.
Or you could put it in a powder and use it later.
Or
pellets.
You could also use hydrogen in fuel cells and for electricity.
Right.
And push that onto other projects, because if you try doing that on cars, the fuel cell cost of a car is $200,000. So you make a $20,000 car into a $200,000 car.
Yeah, R&D, they call it. R&D. You need to do a bit of that before you come up with
a cost-effective
solution.
The high cost of a fuel cell,
when
you start talking about putting it into an aircraft or a train or a ship, that's just within the normal price of a normal power plant on those units.
Yeah.
It's not the detriment that it would be on a private car. It's what the major capital equipment like that costs. It wouldn't be unusual.
Good point. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay. Yeah.
Our hydrogen pitch for the day. See if we can get a little closer.
I feel like hydrogen is part of the future for sure. I'm just really enamored with electricity right now. It's hard for me to have an unbiased judgment towards electricity as the future of power.
Mm.
You know, at least, but I know hydrogen is more core than electricity in many levels in universe. So I'm open to this.
You've got a few other things in your stack today in terms of new solutions to power and.
In terms of my favorite Frankenstein type story this week. The Financial Express had reported of a big breakthrough in science. I always like those titles. Big breakthrough in science. Scientists create world's first stable semi-synthetic organism. Semi-synthetic organism.
We've created a monster.
In a breakthrough, scientists have created the first stable semi-synthetic organism. A single-celled bacterium.
At least it's a very tiny monster. It's not going to eat the world today.
Why did you include this in our slate today, Dr. Future, this very tiny news about this very tiny bacteria?
Well, such a bacterium may play important roles, and especially in terms of molecular deliveries of various sorts, drug delivery, for example, being a prime example.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that makes it synthetic exactly? I mean, it's still made of biological tissues, right?
From what I understand, most DNA has four basic ingredients, and they have added two new ingredients to create a six chemical DNA molecule.
I see.
Which is highly unusual because everything we know, all life on this planet, uses the double-stranded DNA. This is the switch. This new two extra materials creates the possibility of creating specific DNA for achieving specific purposes. It's a programmable DNA.
Hmm. Okay.
So I thought it was interesting, and we're starting to work towards that. Another sign of, hey, if we're going to start mucking around with the DNA on the most basic level, its structure itself, who are we to do that? What's our consciousness to be able to start to play with ourselves in such a profound way and to add new organisms into ourselves as to what we can create as a species? It's to me, it's a Renaissance thought. It's just that kind of, wow, okay, so what are we going to create for ourselves? You know, I think that's where the vision of our leaders comes in. What do we want to see happen with this kind of awareness, this kind of power?
Right. Okay. So somehow this new bacterium has equal spot in the news with, say, what's going on in the oil and gas industry.
Bigger. It's the CRISPR-Cas9 stuff. Because everything, I mean, materials, you see, when you start to harness microorganisms and the power of microorganisms as part of our manufacturing process, everything becomes much more fluid, much more interchangeable, much more free, if you will, of form. And that's a huge jump in industrial revolution. Huge. It's like having nature at your fingertips as your ally in creating whatever you wanted to create. With manufacturing processes.
So you've got news here about a synthetic organism, and I notice that you also have news about how to immunize yourself against fake news, like synthetic news.
Yeah, how can you tell what's fake news?
Yeah. You think these two articles have anything to do with each other? Synthetic organisms and fake news?
Well, you see, we are talking about the edge of science and science fiction, which is one of Dr. Future's favorite places to hang out. And it's true. When you consider what we will know with what we know, or what we already see we're on the horizon of knowing with what we know, it's amazing. And there's so much more beyond that how could you not be amazed? Mm-hmm. You know, at that kind of
thing. That kind of edge.
That kind of edge, yeah.
All right, so you're here to give us some of those amazing insights before they go mainstream.
Some people have thought about this already and are amazingly put their memes out there. And I'm trying to present them to you to see if anyone else out there might resonate. Mm-hmm. And as we go Facebook Live and we have huger audiences, more feedback loops will happen in the media. It will be a very interesting time to be talking about the future. I mean, I don't know how much longer we'll just be doing radio.
Mm-hmm. What else will we be doing?
But okay, let's say you just go to Facebook Live. Mm-hmm. What does that do? Okay, you start sharing your worldly experiences with others on a global scale. Everyone does that. It becomes a personal one-to-many.
So your story has the potential of being amplified, have more mind share of the planetary awareness.
Yes.
Just by having a screen that can be viewed simultaneously by many more people.
Well, it's part
of it. You
still
have to have good content.
There's something about liveness. There's an electricity to live radio, live television that responds to the moment. Like if there was suddenly something that happened over, remember one time we had that strange sound that happened over Santa Cruz and everyone out there in our local audience is reporting in on it. That was pretty magical.
It's time for our next break.
Yeah, so the live element, real-time processes.
Okay. Real-time processes.
You know what you're there. Living in the future in a plastic dome. Sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home. That's where I long to be, yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome. Sounds mighty strange, I agree. Now I call it home, sweet home, and it's where I long to be. Now if you're hungry for food or drink, just go to the teller machine.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, Mrs. Future, you're absolutely correct. That famed snake tracker from India in Florida. Fascinating story.
Oh yes. During the break, we were sort of looking over the articles and wondering where we should go next. And I said, oh, well, you appear to have an interest in today in the lagoon and in biology and in the life forces on the planet.
Like so this story was...
synthetic bacteria.
Yeah. Yes, good call. Well, what's interesting about this is that there's been a problem in Florida with the Everglades and the swamp areas having pythons, thousands and thousands of pythons, been thrown there from other parts of the world, like Burmese pythons. And these have created a real shift in the ecosystem, a real problem. It's kind of... these creatures eat a lot. They're very big. So they eat a lot of the ecosystem of the Everglades. So they have an extermination program to get them out of there as fast as possible. And there's been some attempts. One was by getting a bunch of people who claim they had some expertise in getting pythons and having a freelance hunting weekend to catch them.
Or it's a month, isn't it? Or they have a contest.
Let me double check that. I thought it was once a year. Over a month, though, they hunt attracted 1,000 hunters, most of them amateurs. Out of those 1,000 hunters looking for snakes, how many do you think they caught?
100?
Close. 106.
Oh.
106.
So 1,000 hunters caught 100 snakes.
Yeah.
But how many snakes are there? What are their estimates of how many snakes they're looking for?
Well, there's like way more snakes than that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's I'd probably be a factor of at least 10.
So they're really hard to find, I guess, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So what got my attention here was that the folks in Florida figure that, well, okay, is there any other people on the planet where they have this problem? And it turns out in India, there was an area where some tribes in the jungle had problems with pythons. And that tribe got so good at getting rid of them that they no longer, well, they had a shortage of pythons in India. These guys were really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so did some of these guys from India come and get involved in the contest in Florida?
Well, that's it. Yeah, some of the folks in Florida, like UF biologist Frank Mazzotti, heads up a team of researchers investigating this python issues. They end up figuring out how to get the money to hire two native Indian python hunters with two translators and bring them to the Florida Everglades. And this process is going on right now. Our people are studying these guys and how they track and hunt and how they find things and how different it is from the way Western hunters do things. They got two guys, both in their 50s, from the Arula tribe. That was India's famed snake hunters.
Or python hunters. Mm-hmm. So these two guys from the Arula tribe, do they have any examples of what they're doing, or do they have some suggestions for people who live there?
Yeah, they did. Like, one of the things that they noticed is that their tracking techniques still seem to be mysterious. Like, their hunters move very slowly, and rather than focusing on roads and levees where we're typically, that's where we would look for snakes.
And that's where the hunters find them?
Sunbathers?
No, these are... It's easy to catch the sunbathing snakes.
Yeah, you get those reptilians hanging out in the sun. That's we
noticed that. Hardcore hunters look in the hard places.
But these little guys, they go jumping into the deep bush right away. I mean, they didn't just stay to look for those on a suntan moment. When they don't find it for a while, they seem to stop and they squat and they do this little song or prayer that's usually some kind of ancient invocation mixed with something about the pythons and the weather. And they follow it up with a little beady cigarette.
Oh, okay. So first a prayer, then a smoke.
Yeah.
They've been able to
detect things about the snakes that really surprised us. Like, they could determine when they're tracking a python, whether it's a male or a female, about how large it was and how long ago it was there. You know, they seem to know that.
Yeah. These sound like classic animal hunter skills.
Yeah, yeah. So it's pretty young. They think they've gotten 8 of them so far. They found an old missile base in the Everglades. It had some electrical conduit areas. And they went into these missile base conduit zones, and they found nests of snakes in there. They've been going places no one has gone before in searching in the Everglades. And it's looking good. What are the costs? Well, before these guys were brought in, it was about $11,000 per snake. And the group of volunteer trackers cost about $177 per snake. So far, the Arula effort is about half of the others. It's about $4,920 per snake. Mm. But they've just begun. You know, they got most of their month still left in this trip. Mm. So I've got a link to this whole story, the drfutureshow.com/links page.
Oh, that's very interesting. Makes me wonder how hard is the problem? How severe is it down there in the Everglades?
Yeah, worthy of further investigation, but it sounds like it is fairly severe. You know, it's disturbing.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Okay, lots of news about nature today. Lots of news about things that slither in the water.
Yeah.
Tell me about Tesla's latest autopilot update.
they took what some would consider a backward step back in October, because a year after putting on autopilot and letting cars basically drive for themselves in 2016, they started taking off the autopilot entirely with zero autonomous or active versions. And, you know, drivers actually had to drive again. This was just this last October.
This is really a crazy story. So first,
so the headed and the,
it's like the cars are telling the drivers what to do.
Well, you know, look, it's part of the fear thing too. I mean, somebody actually died when the car was in autonomous mode. So that had a tendency of making everyone more cautious. Mm. So they turned it off and then seriously upgraded the technology and then turned it on again. And now they're slowly bringing on the features. All Tesla cars after 2016, if people have paid the extra $9,000 for this, have the ability of going autonomous with incremental input from nightly uploads.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're moving rapidly in the direction of taking us out of the loop in terms of driving.
Well, I can just only imagine how these machines are going to be maintained in the future, right? It's still going to take the smart human to be able to figure out when something goes wrong, how to deal with it.
Well, it shifted from relatively simple design where they had a single camera down to the 8 cameras. So the single upgrade. After the accidents last year, they went from 1 camera to 8. And another 12 ultrasonic sensors are added to it. So it's not just a slight improvement. It's a huge shift in our ability to track the real-time environment of an automobile and anticipate what to do.
Right.
Well, it's a wholesale upgrade.
Right.
It's not just an incremental change. It's the new autopilot is a critical reboot.
They're starting over. They have 8 cameras now, and so they're going to start putting on new test miles and seeing how the new system works.
They started giving it to their preferred customers on January 1st. Now they're just opening them up to everybody else who paid for the package. Huh. So, yeah. So if you want to be part of that revolution, that's the Tesla cars are the ones to watch with the autonomous right now. I think they're in the front of the pack in terms of how you could have maximum fun with this as it happens.
I got a call. Richard from Felton. Hey, Richard. We got about 1 minute before the break. You want to say something quick?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up the fact we've got this stored methane gas that's in the Alaska tundra, and it, as we go into global warming, it seems that this methane gas, which is about 3 times, I think, approximately more powerful than our normal, like the carbon monoxide, or those type of gases. But in any case, I was just wondering, there's like a natural plasticizer called acrylamide. It can be produced out of like potatoes. Why can't we just coat the tundra and keep those methane gases from escaping?
All right. Food for thought. Thank you.
Yeah, side effects, maybe? I don't know. We're thinking about it. Thank you for that.
All right, folks. This is the Dr. Future Show on KSEO Santa Cruz. We'll be back with our guest, Joe Jordan, talking about the sky in the next hour. Thanks for listening. KSEO Santa Cruz.
Hour 2 of the Dr. Future Show straight ahead, KSEO Santa Cruz.
And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Hey, Mrs. Future, look, we have a special guest in the studio.
That's right. One of our favorite neighbors dropped in. We're going to have some fun now.
Luigi Obidal.
Hello, everybody.
Luigi from Pleasure Point Computers, who helped me out in a pinch a couple weeks ago, and we were stuck in Boulder Creek,
oh, man.
A town no one could leave.
Jeez, both sides you guys are trapped us. it was an honor to come down. I love being on your show, in your show, at your show. I love being here. So
yeah, well, we love you having you here, too.
And your show's pretty great, too, man.
Yeah, it's really fun. You have your own show, right?
Yeah, we're doing something on a Wednesday nights now, our local radio show here on KSCO from 7 to 8 on Wednesday nights. It's just mostly just a kind of a screw-around call-in show. We had professional wrestlers on last week. Super cool. Like, it was a great show. Random. It went everywhere. But I am trying to actually put together a little two-hour show of my own to do a computer call-in show. Basically, kind of what I did for the space when I filled in for you guys.
People have a problem with their machine?
Yeah, give us a call, you know, a quick little free tech support, you know, and maybe, you know, a couple people learn some things real quick and go home and try something and maybe make your computing experience a little bit nicer and more friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Macs and PCs.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Everything. Macs, PCs, Unix, Linux. I can take pretty much most questions. I'm very good at saying I don't know. Uh-huh. And I think that's the key. Right. Or I'll find out.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you will give people some feedback without even charging them anything.
Yes.
What was your policy on that?
We used to have a free diagnosis. We did that for 5 years. We do have a $20 diagnosis now if you're bringing the machine. But come down and talk with me. There's so many places that it just they won't just talk with you for 5 minutes. You have a quick question. You're at Best Buy. You're seeing something that's kind of weird. We're open. Give me a call. You see some feature on a machine, give me a call. If I know it, I'll help explain it to you, and maybe you'll come and have the computer service with me. So, you know, it really works out. But I'm more than happy to just talk with people. So,
have you seen any secondhand VR gear come in yet?
I haven't. Oh, I've been watching it. Oh, I've been watching for VR stuff. I've been watching for drone stuff. I've been watching for VR stuff. You know, if you have anything that's broken, that might be a drone or VR or anything, feel free to bring by Pleasure Point Computers. We'd love to take a look at it. But no, I haven't seen anything yet. But boy, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I don't wish anybody's stuff to be broken, but if something breaks, bring it by. Yeah.
It's inevitable. It happens.
It happens.
At least you can call someone.
So you're listening to us talk about the new Tesla Autopilot, right?
Yes. Oh, Tesla's so cool. Just such a cool, and it's right in our backyard. How lucky are we? That's so for the nerds. Super cool.
But I've been looking at this. This looks like the fastest way to having or personally having an autonomous system as an individual at this point.
Yes. Right? It's incredible. And they're innovating. They say they're going to innovate every 9 months to 1 year. You know, the normal car manufacturer back in John DeLorean's days, you know, he didn't want to build a 7-year car. That was the whole thing. A 7-year car. That's how GM always made stuff. So he made a 30-year car. He made the DeLorean. It had my body warranty on my DeLorean just ran out. What, 4 or 5 years ago? Yeah. Pretty cool. So granted, there's no real place I can go. Well, actually, I guess I could go get service. That's beside the fact. but the idea of having a 7-year car or anything, that's gone. We're innovating so fast in everything. And cars are now technology. That's what they are. So Elon Musk came out and said, yeah, we're going to be innovating every 9 months to 12 months. Sometimes it's going to be hardware. If you buy a 2017 Tesla, maybe the 2018 Tesla has some hardware issue or hardware thing that your 2017 doesn't have. It may not be able to be retrofitted, but that's not what we're about. We're all about just making it the cutting edge, making it the best it can possibly be, and enjoying it. And there's going to be software updates, but man, I love how they're innovating. They're like, no, we're not going to do the 5-year model. We're not going to do the 7-year model. We're going to innovate when it's right. And off we go.
Yeah, it's really interesting how they dropped the single camera Mobileye to the 6 camera.
Did I hear something about an 8 camera? Oh,
maybe it is 8.
Amazing. Yeah. That's so cool. I love it. I've still tried to get try to drive my DeLorean down onto the Tesla property and go, hey, can I just, you know, look around and maybe I'll get a special tour or something?
Yeah, put some of that tech in my DeLorean?
Exactly. Some of you guys just want to take a look at mine, I can take a look at yours. You can take apart mine, I'll take apart yours, you know, you want a little pass back and forth? No, they still haven't written me back, so I'm working on it.
Yeah, I know. You gotta show up in person.
Well, knock on the gate.
It does bring the idea though that another approach to autonomy is to create some kind of autonomous Android robot that you just put in any car and it would drive it.
Yes, or a system that fits over your steering wheel that reads something else, you know, that's a kind of a whole all-in-one that would have something, you know, there's got to be an apparatus that will kind of mimic the human body to sit in the seat,
It can't be that hard for a robot, especially just for driving skills, driving a robot.
Like a briefcase George Jetson thing where it unfolds to a guy with legs, you know, and a wheel and eyes, and then he sits in the seat and then he'll drive you around, you fold him back up, put him in your suitcase. And
yes, I can do a 2002 Subaru.
That's right, It's like, need to upgrade firmware. There's some cool stuff coming out, though. But every time they push something with Tesla, I always think of the U.S. robotics thing from iRobot, when the red light goes on and they push all the firmware to the new robots, you know, in the movie. I always think about that when Tesla died. I picture some big red light going on and then sending all the stuff to the Tesla cars.
Well, that's the thing, is that they learn from the accidents. Like the big upgrade, the hardware was prompted by the accident where somebody died in Florida.
Right.
They didn't see the truck that was pulling in front of them.
Yeah.
Some solar reflection.
Yeah, there was a hill, the side of the truck was white, and it was coming up, and like it came up and over a hill or something, and like it matched the sky. Yeah,
and the single camera got blinded out by it.
Yeah.
And somehow the multi-camera system is the answer to that. So
yeah, multiple apertures and get different sun settings and such, different times of day. That's awesome.
Yeah, just automatic. So.
So cool.
All right, well listen, it's already time for our first break. Hang tight and we'll be back with Dr. Future, Luigi, other guests. Stay tuned.
All right. What was that?
A dog? Is there a dog in the house? What was that?
Okay, we have our regularly scheduled guest coming on in a few minutes, but first, I wanted to complete with Luigi. He was here yesterday for the meeting on KSCO and the future and the conversions with the new media.
Yes.
And yeah, I wanted to hear a little bit of your vision for the, you see, Luigi doesn't just fix computers. He's actually the ship's engineer. He's kind of like Scotty.
Oh man, that's such a compliment. Oh, huge compliment.
And so he sees a major upgrade to the KSCO on the lines of getting a warp drive.
Yes. Get you back up and running a little bit quicker, a little bit more like just more so that the system kind of gets forgotten about. You know, the system's there. It we use it, but we don't worry about bandwidth issues and all that kind of stuff. You know, find out where that glitch is, find out where that bottleneck is and get rid of it.
Okay, like for example, Facebook Live.
Yes.
So how do you see this actually working? So we're on regular AM and FM radio right now.
Yes.
Transmitting out.
And so the idea then is we'd be transitioning over to Facebook Live, where we would be taking our normal regularly scheduled broadcast shows and putting them, adding a visual to it, and also adding another, basically porting that show out to another way, another medium, something like a phone, something like your computer. So, granted, you can listen to KSCO.com and listen to us every day online, but if you have it on your phone on Facebook Live, you could listen to us live as it's happening with some video, and it's a way for us to reach more people and for you to share our stuff easily and quickly.
And it also moves it into the whole Facebook ecosystem.
Yes, and we're starting to move into Mark Zuckerberg's island, yeah. That's
the right. Walled garden with his amazing search capabilities.
That's right. Oh, boy.
And shared rights. And well,
oh, boy. Just check the box. Just accept it. Just accept.
Just say yes,
yeah,
right?
Just you don't have to read it. It's only 280 pages.
Yeah. Now, what is this about? I've heard that the numbers go way up on Facebook Live if you're just seeing the sunset.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's been... So it's a lot of people who check it. You know, we see it with the surf cameras. You see people who don't live here who want to have their window back into Santa Cruz. They want to be back here. Wherever they moved away from, they want to be back to Santa Cruz.
They have a connection with the town.
Yes. And so they see East Cliff. They see West Cliff. They see that plant that they always walked by with, you know, with the one pole that has the skateboard painted on it. You know, they see that all the time and they want to see that again. And if they can see that in a live video as the sun is rising, it kind of makes them feel like they're there, I think. That's what it makes me feel like. Yeah.
And so you want to maximize that experience.
Yeah.
Right?
And if you can do it live and be able to time it. So yeah, the sun's coming up. I'm up. Yeah, let's watch the sunrise. I'm sitting in Alaska right now. I better be much nicer down in Santa Cruz. Let's go check it out. You know, even though I already saw the sunrise about an hour ago.
Yeah, it's naturally 4K, 3D.
Yeah, and depending on how it goes, it can get incredible. And I mean, if you can add with Facebook Live, you can add like a pan tilt zoom camera or something like that with like some type of crazy 400 time optical zoom. You could, you know, check out a specific surf spot from a tower someplace in town. It's endless. Really cool stuff if used properly.
I was just thinking today, we were out walking in the Cochrane Lagoon before the show.
Okay.
And we're noticing all the life there. There's the egrets and there are schools of fish and there's big pieces of wood that are flowing into the ocean, being pulsed into the ocean by the rivers. And to have that ecosystem as part of our what's going on right now.
It's home.
We're here, right?
Yeah.
It's our own ecosystem.
It'd be wonderful to be able to see it. You know, and something like that, especially with like the sunrises and sunsets, the cameras could be used for many things, but just point out to the ocean. Oh, it's awesome. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And be able to change point of view as well, like the streaming from the drones.
From anywhere in the world, you know, and you have 4K video sitting in the street in Shanghai or something. I mean, that's amazing. Like just the internet is awesome. Love the internet. Super cool. Go internet. This is the coolest thing, man. Just every day, new things, new stuff. So I just love it.
The surfers embraced it? Do they have cameras on their surfboards?
You know, a lot of the GoPros, a lot of people, when they're out there, but when you go to the surf spots to fix the cameras that may have been baseball batted and things, it seems like a lot of the surfers don't like the cameras too much. That's their spot. They don't want that spot to be shown unless they're not there. Then they want to be able to look at it later. So it's kind of a give and take, and you know, and
contentious.
It is.
You know what would probably be contentious?
There's not one mind in the surfer bodies.
That's very true.
How about robot surfboards with cameras on board?
Oh man! Oh, just to like patrol the. Oh, dude, that's cool. Cool idea. No, you just shot up all the synapses are fine, man. There's some cool ideas.
It would definitely push the boundaries in terms of personal space between the different
definitely
servers out there, but still it would be very, very interesting.
Every day, new stuff. Every day someone will come up with it. You'll see it.
There you go. That's Luigi Obado at Pleasure Point Computers, where he thinks about this stuff practically every day.
It's a hobby. Thank you, Dr. Mrs. Future.
Sounds
wonderful
like a
to
passion.
See you both. It is. I love it. I'd
love to have you on, Luigi. It's great. Yeah.
Oh, it's great seeing you both.
So what's next for you?
Actually, I'm going to go into the back room and see if we can get some of that Facebook Live stuff maybe running. See if we can get some of the cable. Well, I brought a cable over. I'm going to see if I kind of patch it in and stuff. So I guess I'll do a little work while I'm here. But other than that, we're going to carry on and help Santa Cruz fix some stuff.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks again for showing up and being here. Thanks again for subbing for us. Appreciate
always,
it.
Always. Always. Anytime.
And consider our show a beta test for whatever you think would be appropriate.
I'm honored.
All right.
Thank you both.
All right,
folks. That was Luigi Obado. And now we are sort of in a holding pattern waiting for Joe Jordan to land from outer space. But he did send his cohort, Rachel Goodman.
Excellent.
So
let's talk to Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Rachel, hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me on, fellow radio travelers. I am beaming in from Bonnie Doon.
Oh, fantastic. Do you listen to us on the net or on AM or FM?
On the net. Yeah, it comes in better on my internet than it does over the airwaves, but that's okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's the way things evolve.
At least
Bonnie Doon has bandwidth. I remember when Bonnie Doon was one of the last resorts. It was hard to get bandwidth up there. No stores, you know, no bandwidth. But how is it up there now? Are you getting sun? Is it a beautiful day?
Yes, it's beautiful. It's drying out a little after some real drenching. You know, when you guys get 3 inches down there, we get about 15.
I understand.
It's wet and beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. Yeah, we live in Boulder Creek ourselves, so we understand.
Oh. Yes, the rainforest. Yes. We do. We know what to do with all that extra water.
You know, it was interesting.
We send it down to you.
Yeah. Right. I was coming out. We were on what's called the Cochrane Lagoon, and it has fresh water streaming into the ocean right here. And it was coming down in pulses. It's like a circulatory system almost. Fascinating.
So, Rachel, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience a little bit? I'm sure you and Joe kicked around some ideas to bring into the show today,
right? So the context I have is that Joe has a new show, and he'll be covering what Joe does best with the sky, and my understanding, and also climate change.
Yes, and so we're co-hosting the show, and we go back a ways in terms of radio production when we worked on a show called The DNA Files. Together, of which I was the managing editor, and he did a piece on extremophiles for us when we had a documentary series with John Hockenberry a number of years ago.
Cool.
And I've been producing radio for years, so we decided, you know, after watching the squelching of information about these important topics, to do the Truth Squad. You know, we need to get this information about hopeful solutions as well as troubling issues out to the public so they can make informed decisions. And it was timely because we just heard today that the EPA has a gag order and so does the USDA, and I hope they lift those because we need to know what our government's doing with our tax dollars about science.
So a little more transparency here.
Yeah, who's issuing gag orders? Like, what is the context?
We don't know. The Washington Post is reporting today that both the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, have been on a lockdown information block to the public. So what they used to do is issue their own press releases about major breakthroughs in science or any kind of new initiatives that they were part of.
So
we don't know how long this is going to happen, but it just happened today.
Really? Okay, so it's since the inauguration this has been going on.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So we're going to watch and see whether or not America can become a pure propaganda state, whether there can be a lockdown on public information in a place where our Constitution is supposed to protect the right of free speech. Right?
And fortunately, we have some direct contacts to scientists who are not afraid to speak. We were lucky enough to have Gary Griggs on. He's not got a gag order because he works for the University of California. We invited another scientist on, and she said she had to ask because she was afraid that she would lose not only her job, but that maybe her whole agency would be shut down if she said the wrong thing. So they're really scared. But we have some scientists that are not afraid to speak, and we have them booked for the next 3 or 4 weeks. We're really excited. We have people with all kinds of expertise coming up to talk on the show from all over the country, but also from right here in the Monterey Bay.
Do you look at local issues in the Monterey Bay?
Somewhat, sure. But a lot of these people just happen to be working here, not necessarily only on issues having to do with local science. But yes,
well, it's
for
all,
sure.
We're
going to have a show about whether, you know, there have been any advances in nuclear power to make it safer, or whether we're still in the same worrisome situation with waste and also safety of them going, you know, melting down. How are we doing? Is that getting any better? Because certainly there's things that recommend nuclear power, and that is that it doesn't cause carbon to be emitted, but the downsides are so great that it's kind of been stalled. So we're going to be looking at that with fresh look in the context of where we are with global warming. We're going to be looking at science that is being done about the habitat on Mars and what it might tell us about how our planet's atmosphere behaves. So connections between ourselves
Mars, the Martian
and other planets.
Yes.
We'll be bringing in the Martians.
That's good.
All the people who study them.
Yes, I suppose. Do you believe in terraforming?
Oh, gosh. Believe in it? it hasn't been done yet.
Okay. Well, let's see if we find any microbes there first. Anyway, we've got to go to a break. Yeah. We'll be back. Hopefully, Joe's on his way, and we'll be able to see you as a tag team here.
He's called in. He said he had a little delay, but we're expecting him any minute. In the meantime, it's great talking with you, Rachel, and hearing about the show and what's going on in the world of science and politics. Good job keeping us informed. Okay, folks.
We'll help you, oh yeah. The stores that use it outperform those who don't have it the matrix.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking with Rachel Goodman, who's been working with Joe Jordan in creating a new show on the KSCO. Planet Watch. Okay, good.
Planet Watch. Yes.
She's going to be watching this planet.
2 o'clock on Sundays.
2 o'clock on Sundays. Okay, good. Now, you said you've been working with Joe for a while on environmental issues and media projects along these lines. Could you give us an idea of how you met Joe? He's such an enigmatic character. I'm kind of curious how you two met.
Well, he's everywhere. You know, he's Cosmic Joe. Everyone knows him.
He does. Our street has a regular sky night every year or so by Joe. He never ceases to amaze. Yeah.
That's right. I remember running into him one time outside of Logos, and he had a bunch of people surrounding a rain puddle in the middle of the rain, looking at the way the light was reflecting off of the rain puddle.
Yes.
And it was doing these little two-point paragraph marker thing, and he said, you know why it does that? And, of course, he had an answer. I can't remember what it was, but everyone, all these strangers, were gathered around the puddle in the middle of the rain on a rainy night, looking into the water, and I thought, well, there's someone who can get people excited about anything. That's a real gift.
the real things, yeah.
He and I worked on a program called Field Notes on KUSP for years, which was little five-minute features, kind of getting to know your natural backyard. So we would interview scientists.
Really? Your backyard?
Working on sea otters or working on grasslands or any number of various stories or birds. And we would interview them and go out in the field and get sounds from the field. So it was a real natural history series about what lives in your own backyard. And that was really fun.
Nice. That's great. And so give us some little tips about what kinds of things you guys are researching for the Planet Show.
Sure. We have already booked several weeks out. We have an intern named Tommy who's been booking, and he's already got some great guests for us. Coming up the next show, Sunday afternoon at 2, is some folks, Merck Martinelli and Brian Sefton, and they are from a company called Oak Bio. And what they do is use microbes to somehow, and he'll tell you how, turn carbon into usable product. So we need to take carbon out of the atmosphere. Somehow they figured out how to do that and turn it into usable product. So we're going to talk to them about how they're doing it. They probably won't give us their secrets, but at least what are the implications, you know, of capturing carbon, which we produce 35 billion tons annually globally?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we can't keep doing that, but we can also try to.
It's obviously a very useful molecule. I mean, carbon, come on, it's going to be, I mean, it's the basis molecules of biological life. Surely we must have a use for it. Maybe the whole nanomaterials world.
I guess they're using microbes to somehow convert it from captured carbon into something usable, and I'm sure he'll tell us a little bit more about what kind of product. It looks like they're even turning it into food for animals and fuels and plastics and things like that. So
you get involved with the whole microbial understanding of things and how microbes are an important part of the future and creating a better planet?
Yeah, not only are they the future, but they are us. Apparently, we're carrying around 80% of our body weight as microbes.
80%. Well, I heard there were 10 microbes in every human cell. So at the very least, that makes us some kind of collective organism.
We're just a host. That's it, pretty much.
A host? Yeah.
So, you know.
You don't think they pull our chain? You don't think microbes can make me want to eat something in the middle of the night?
Right. I heard cats actually can control us through microbes and make us feed them more.
Really?
You heard that or you experienced that firsthand?
Well, both. It explains a lot, you know.
I see. Yeah, I should have known that the felines would have the microbial wisdom.
They know what to do with
them. Rule the world, them and the microbes.
Either that or it's the microbes that are running us around. Maybe our so-called higher life forms are just the tool of the collective intelligence of the microbes.
That's right. You know? So another of the guests we're having on the 5th is Carol Stoker from NASA, and she's the Mars expert, and hopefully she'll come on and talk to us about what she's learning about, how water evaporated on Mars, how the atmosphere changed. Will help us understand what could be ahead for our planet. Hopefully won't be ahead for our planet as far as what we're learning about the upper atmosphere. So she'll be coming on, hopefully, on the 5th.
Are you optimistic about whether or not they'll find life on Mars?
I would love to hear more about their feelings about that, because it seems like every time they send a probe there, they learn something new. The fact that they think water was actually there is a huge part of why they think maybe they'll find some microbes or some evidence that they used to be there. So,
yes.
Yeah, we'll learn a whole lot more. And then we're talking to a fellow named Michael Loik, and he's going to be on February 12th talking about climate change and renewable energy. So we would love to hear, you know, what new breakthroughs are happening with renewables. We need to have that happen pretty fast. How fast? So we're going to be talking with this scientist, Michael Loik, about that.
That'd be interesting to hear what they think of the economic climate for supporting alternatives as well. Is that growing? Does the new administration help with that, or is it just gas and oil?
I think people are doing it on their own. The private investment in renewables is really driving it.
Yes.
Probably will continue to drive it as new. One of the things that's happened, it seems, is that the cost of solar has plummeted as far as creating solar panels. It's really dropped recently. And
it's incredible. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's going to come into par with a lot of other things.
And now so, Texas is getting known for gas, oil, and wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, so the more traditional sectors are getting on board, so suggesting it's moving mainstream really fast.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do they always say, that the leaders will follow, the people will lead, or whatever that quote is. But I do think that a good idea, regardless of whether you, quote unquote, believe in global warming, most people believe in paying less for their power.
Yes. Tesla's vision was that you'd stick two poles in the ground and get all the power and heat that you needed. From wherever you were, that didn't seem to jive well with the economic models of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow we needed to charge for power. Though cheap power, many would argue, was what built America.
Mm-hmm.
It was cheap energy.
So I'm curious. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just curious if there are some local interests that you guys are researching that would be of interest
take
to
it
the
home here
local scientists. Yeah. Obviously, rainfall would be in the record-setting numbers this last year. Are there other things in the local area that you guys will be covering?
Wonderful you mentioned that, because our guest, I believe on the 12th, let me double-check that. Yes, our guest on the 12th, Michael Loik, is a UCSC professor, and he's going to talk about from drought to deluge in California. So he's going to bring it down to our local level and talk about weather patterns as it relates to climate change and what we can expect here as residents of the Central Coast and in residents of California as we go forward. So that'll be really interesting, I think. And he's up there at the Plant Ecology Department, Plant Physiology and Climate Change Ecology Department at the Environmental Studies Department up there at UC Santa Cruz.
Well, it'll be interesting, yeah. I'd like to know what he thinks of this new psychological vaccine that's supposed to immunize yourself against fake news on climate change.
it
just came out.
I like that, yeah. I teach a mass media class, and the first thing my students wanted to know is how can we inoculate ourselves against fake news? And So I'm going to work on that.
That's great.
Yeah. They're experimenting with this. Exposing people to fake facts with the general warning about fake news seems to help.
Yes, a label would be nice.
Yeah, inoculation.
You're about to.
Yeah, we have a new label. It's called Alternative Facts. Alt Facts.
If you don't like the news, go out and invent some of your own. Right?
That's Chevy Chase. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's become. But that's huge. I mean, it wouldn't be so funny if it wasn't so true. The climate change is a classic example of how it's kind of split our culture.
I'm wondering, Rachel, if you are aware of, I think it was a large number of research scientists from NOAA that were really furiously busy copying as much climate data, historical archives, and current information as possible because they were concerned that the new administration would just erase all of the government data that has been collected for the last several decades. And so,
I had heard that, and I think that is true. And the other piece of news very recently to come out were twofold. One is that people in the Department of Energy were asked to remove the word climate change from all their reports that had previously been published. So the interviewer, I think it was on This American Life, said, well, how are you going to describe the satellite that's tracking global climate change patterns? And they said, we're just going to call it some other kind of satellite. How do you talk about this stuff if you're working on it?
Well, look, is it free speech if they're omitting facts? Like,
That's normal.
It's sort of the opposite of free speech. That's definitely
very Orwellian.
All right, well, Rachel, hang on. We're going to go to our final break, and then we'll be back and crossing our fingers that we'll get a chance to have you and Joe at the same time. And in the meantime, it's great having you talking about your Planet Watch show. We'll be right back with more Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Rachel Goodman. I noticed on Google, Rachel talks about you being associated with Cabrillo. Is that still?
Yes, I teach journalism there. I have 3 classes this semester, 1 in broadcast writing. We do television, radio production and writing. And then I teach a mass media class, which is all about what we've been talking about, where the truth and facts come in and how to be media literate.
So do you have any advice on fake news yourself? How do you just differentiate what's real from fake?
It's not always easy, you know.
No,
the average person doesn't have time to fact check every article. There's some obvious hallmarks. One is there's often one granular piece of truth or actual information in there, and then they load it down with a bunch of other baloney. And one way to tell is that there's often, if it's masquerading as coming from an actual news site like ABC or CNN, it'll have ABC, but it'll have a couple extra letters after it in the URL.
Oh, okay. So that's a suspect site to begin with. Mm-hmm. Extra letters. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Extra letters in the URL that look like it's real. And the frame looks like it's a normal news organization. Even the graphics look the same. But the URL takes you to one of those clickbait sites, usually, that are selling awful things. That's one way to look. And the other is to check it out on Snopes.com. They're doing a great job fact-checking memes and rumors and other things that are flying around.
Oh, good. So still, we got Snopes on to play with here. Are there any other sites like Snopes, or are they really the best of breed in fact-checking?
I think they're the best now. They're doing basic reporting on some of these stories that are leaking out and sounding kind of too weird to be true. And then sometimes they find out they are true, and other times not. But it's a great service for people who have to make decisions.
Are there any crowdsourced fact-checking services?
Not that I know of yet.
Joe just arrived. All right.
Oh, good.
Okay, yeah, we're just asking if there are any crowdsourced fact-checking services for looking at whether or not fake news was real or not. Or how do you know it's fake news? Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Happy whatever it is.
2017.
Beautiful day out there. Hey, do I look frazzled? Are we doing Facebook
Live? Yeah, I know you barely got here.
Sorry, everybody, that I'm, 45 minutes late? I had a major, what you would call a cluster F blank blank K, a hilarious tale. After I unravel it, I can tell you more about it.
Okay.
But anyway, fake news. I did hear you on the way down here a little bit on the radio, and I heard Rachel talking about weather satellites and things, and I've got a great story for you. the kind of folks who are in control of things, supposedly now in this country. I had a meeting with a guy when I was teaching at San Jose State. He's the head of the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center's meteorological satellite program. Huge program with tons of amazing stuff up there, feeding us all this wonderful, important information. And he said that one of the Congress people he had dealt with was questioning the value of having these weather satellites up there. He was saying, so what if we cut funding? We can always just check the Weather Channel. I mean, you cannot make that stuff up. That actually was said by a congressperson, you know, to the head of NASA's meteorological satellite program.
The weather's good enough for him the way it is.
I mean, he wasn't joking. He was serious. Yeah. That's the thing. It's a great joke, but I mean, it was serious.
But I'm making just noticing all the new biosensors out now. I mean, we could have an instrument cluster that kept track of this lagoon in great detail. Mm. Salinity and that'd creatures that were there.
A time lapse of the tide.
Yeah, the sunrise, would be a fun the sunset. Movie,
you know? Hey, by the way, I wanted to say, Rachel, sorry, very sorry for screwing everything up, but you've done a yo woman's job hanging on all this long, and sounds great, and you're saying important, wonderful things.
Well, we didn't think you would team up with just anybody.
Right. It was a golden thing when we got Rachel.
That's great.
She's world class, as you all know.
So how did you two get to know each other?
We go way back. We actually did radio stuff on the late, great KUSP FM. And in fact, we had a series called Field Notes, little 5-minute shows that would come on every week.
Yeah, she mentioned that a little bit
earlier. She was the managing editor of a national series called DNA Files, which was all about, you know, the origins of life and all kinds of things about molecular biology and so on. And she and I worked on a piece. Well, it was an hour-long segment of this whole series. It was on astrobiology, and they called it How to Make a Cosmic Omelet. You know, it's like the origins of life. And I did a little 5-minute opening piece where they sent me to Yellowstone National Park with a professional sound recordist.
Oh, awesome.
We recorded sound from the boiling sulfuric acid hot pools there. And this is the places where ancient life evolved and crawled out of there. Yeah. They have a whole new class, kingdom of life called the Archaea, as opposed to, you know, the other two. But anyway, if you Rachel and I, actually, and everybody else who worked on that series, we won a National Peabody Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Award for that nationally aired series. And so you can DNA Files, the DNA, that was back in 2001, then they did another series a few years later.
You're thinking of new ideas all the time for a show, too. I mean, I think you and Sun were just talking about Sunsets 24/7.
There was a guy here who apparently does Sunset a local webcam for sunsets. I've dreamed for years of a worldwide network of webcams that at any given time, you can look at the sunset in whatever part of the world has the sunset going on right now.
Yeah.
And
right. Always get a blast of sunsets.
So. In fact, I can tell you where that is right now. It would be, well, in the central time zone, you know, like around, between Ohio and Minnesota or something like that. They're probably having a sunset right now. So we'd have a camera set up so you could just go there right now and see what's going on. Same thing for sunrises. And it turned out, Sun, I was telling her this hot idea, and she said, oh, she also had actually, you've applied for a grant to do something like that. A long time ago. Well, hey, let's do it. We've only got so much longer to do these
science
things.
Science art. Yes.
Absolutely. So, you know, Joe, since you're here, I know one of the things I love is when you tell us stories of the sky. You are Cosmic Joe. And I'm just wondering, you know, Chinese New Year's about to start. We're probably coming up on another full moon. You got any
good stories
anything
from
cool
the now?
From the moon to the earth that we should be aware
something
of?
We might see.
Well, let us see. First of all, and you heard it here first, maybe some of you, even before we announced it on Planet Watch, do you know what's happening this summer? I mean, really, really, really
the
big
eclipse,
deal.
Right? The eclipse?
The first in many, many years, decades, total eclipse of the sun to traverse the entire United States from Oregon to Georgia.
September 15th or something.
And you got to just be there or be square. I mean, everybody in this country lives within a few hundred miles of this. And the thing is, most people probably just, okay, yeah, total eclipse of the sun. I've seen eclipses. Yeah, and it was a total eclipse too. But no, it wasn't total where you were.
Yeah,
if it was 97% total where you were, all you saw was a slight dimming of things and kind of weird shadows and things. But
this
it's
is
not
real
light. Yeah, you got to be inside the 100-mile-wide path of totality. That's where it's at.
Yeah. And where are you going to be?
I'm hoping to be up around Bend, Oregon, because it's in the eastern Oregon where you got dry, pretty good weather prospects. And also that town, I know a bunch of people have moved up there. It's kind of the all-the-rage place to go now.
Yeah.
And they got beautiful streams and lakes and forests and beautiful landscape. And so the thing is, it's not quite in the path of totality. So for anybody who's actually wanting to maybe strategize, don't try to spend the night outside the path of totality because you may end up missing the eclipse with a traffic jam the next day on the one two-lane road leading.
Well, and then isn't it also true that clouds are a big issue? And every place up in a rainy zone like Oregon.
Oh, but no, but this is Eastern Oregon.
Eastern Oregon is a little more dry?
Oh, yeah, it's kind of desert.
So you could plan like a camping expedition out
there. Yeah, and got to find some farmer who will let us in his field. Or you know, I haven't figured it all out yet. I mean, I can probably find a bed and breakfast for $500 a night.
Well, there is another option. You might be able to send an interesting proposal to Symbiosis. You heard of that?
It's an art festival. Yeah, it's like a Burning Man sort of thing.
It's the post-Burning Man, more of an art festival.
But are they having that?
They're going to do it in the totality.
Right, Bend, Oregon.
Bruce Damer's going to be there. He's going to be doing some...
I got to get a hold of him then. I've been meaning to do that anyway.
Yeah, some kind of collaboration seems to be in order.
Hey, by the way, you asked, son, just one other thing I would say that's a little more close to now.
Yes.
Is keep an eye on the southwest sky every evening. The first thing you see after the sun goes down. In fact, you can see it now. Well before the sun goes down is a little bright white super bright dot, Venus, and above that is Mars. You won't see Mars till it gets a little darker a little bit later, but you'll see Venus, and they're getting closer and closer. They're sort of in a, it's not quite a conjunction, but they're getting to their closest approach, which is like several full moon diameters apart right about now, or maybe a week from now. Anyway, just you can actually watch them move relative to each other, and you will see them earning the name planets, because planets comes from a Greek word meaning the wanderers. So it's these bright wandering lights in the sky. So there you go.
That's just after sunset.
Chasing the sun. And then long after, too. I mean, they take quite a while to go down as the Earth rotates. So you can see Venus and Mars until probably, at least 9-something, maybe later.
Yeah, they're a little dance with each other.
And these days, you know, you tell people look for these things, but they're seeing bright lights all the time. There are airplanes coming in, you know, and around here they're all over the place. But look for the one that's not moving and doesn't have any blinking lights.
That would be another really good preset on some KSCO cam up on the antennas here, where you could just put in Mars, Venus, and
a Venus cam.
Venus cam. Watch the dance. Now they kind of wiggle in front of each other a little bit over the hours. You could do a time lapse of that.
Mm. Oh well, actually, the motion I was just talking about, the motion relative to you, that's a day to day thing. It's not day-to-day. You're not going to see that in a matter of
hours. Not much over a few
other
hours.
Other than them going down as the Earth rotates, you know, the normal setting, just like the sun sets, you know, the moon sets. The planet set, that happens. But from day to day, you'll notice the difference in their positions relative to each other.
Now, we had a piece on Venus last week about that we have a satellite in orbit around it. We had a gravity wave observed on Venus.
On Venus?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mean like observed from that satellite?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they said it's kind of
planetary.
Like
planetary.
You know how
seem to be a stripe across the whole planet.
But it's not a gravity wave in the physics sense.
You're not talking about a gravitational wave, which is a cosmological thing.
No, this is more like how water will go across the sandbar and create ripples in the in the sand. Mm-hmm. It's more like that, and only it's a combination of the atmosphere with the with the terrain below it.
So you'll have to give me the link to that story. Yeah.
All right, Joe. Well,
thanks, Rachel.
Thanks, Rachel.
Joe. Keep an eye on the sky.
Yeah. Good luck with your new show.
Sundays at 2:00.
Two to three. Yeah.
All right. Planet Watch, and this is the Dr. Future Show on
KSCO.
Rachel.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz. Thank you both.